With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, I'm Clive Anderson. Welcome to My Seven Wonders Live. In the My Seven Wonders podcast, I ask a special guest to select and talk about the seven wonders of his or her world. This episode is one of several we recorded in front of a live audience at the 2022 Edinburgh Festival Fringe. In this recording, my guest is an award-winning Irish comedian whose career in comedy got going years ago with early success on stage and television in Australia. So here we are with an enthusiastic Edinburgh Fringe audience discovering the seven wonders of Jim Owen.
I shook hands like we hadn't met, but we've been talking backstage.
Jim, you're going to stand there?
Well, no, I could. I mean, yeah. Awkward for you. No, I'll sit down.
Yeah, no. So, as I say, I remember you from years ago when you burst on the scene and you were this exotic creature. Because, oh, there's this comedian with this slightly unusual name, Jimone. But he's from Australia. He's on telly in Australia and he's coming over to... So what took you to Australia at such a young age? You must have been about 15 when you started doing...
No, I was 22. I went on a year's working holiday. I went to London when I was 18.
Yes.
I grew up in Northern Ireland, as you can tell with my brogue.
Yeah.
And I went to London at 18. I was there 4 years, did a building course, and then went to Australia. And then when I was there, I liked jokes. I never really seen live stand-up, and a girl was doing live stand-up, and we went along to play pool, and then I ended up, she put my name down, and that was the introduction to me doing stand-up. And
that's a slightly irritating thing for you to do. She's trying to do stand-up, and you're thumping away at the pool table.
It was a
form of heckling, isn't it?
It was a really great introduction to it, because when I hear other people's stories... of how they started, they would watch everything and analyze everything and then think about it and then take 2-3 years. I'd already done it, but before I realized what it was I was doing.
Yeah.
And then I actually watched the rest of the night and really enjoyed the rest of the night, and then went along the next week and was shocked that the guy that was on the week before told the exact same story word for word. And I was like, he said that last week. and then I went, oh, this is an act. People are doing an act. And then that was because I was just really naive to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then loved the whole fear element, loved the fact that, oh, I'm doing this and it's really quite scary. And you're backstage with a group of people and you met a whole network of people that I've, like, to this day that I still know. A lot of the comics that I started out with, we ended up having careers. But yeah, it was very. Yeah. And any comic that you talk to of my age, they've got a weird way in which they got into it.
Like,
Owen O'Neill told me, it was like, read a poem out, you got a pint. And he went to a pub, and then that was an introduction to those people.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we all had some sort of bizarre background to it.
But you've been doing it for, you've been coming to the Edinburgh Festival Fringe since the...
That was 1988. Anyway, long time.
Yeah. Anyway, so you're doing...
1888.
You're doing a show. Let me just get you to mention your show now. So you're doing a show this year.
Yes,
what's it called and where's it at? And then we'll get on with the wonders.
Yeah, good. It's called The Crack. The Crack. And it's on 8:40 at the Atomic. I don't know.
Have you got a PR person that should be nudging you? Learn the name.
Anybody? Where am I on? Anybody? Just the Tonic, thank you. My wife.
Yeah. Yeah. She is now. So it's not the crack, it's the tonic. Just the tonic, yeah.
No, the show's called The Crack, oh. And it's at just the tonic.
There we go. We've got that.
My wife.
One day. So let's get on with your wonders. So,
yes.
So you've got seven wonders. Now, the first one on your list, and I don't know if you can remember the list you sent, is Prince. So that's your wonder. Yeah. Which Prince are we talking about?
The artist, yes. Formerly known as Prince.
Yes.
That's who I'm talking about.
Okay.
When I was in London in 1985, I think it was, I don't know if you'd... or was aware of Prince before that, but the first time I became aware of Prince was Purple Rain, and he came over and he was in the Brit Awards, yeah. And he had a bouncer that walked up with him, and I just thought, what a punch, what an absolute yes. idiot, and I had no time for him. Like, and that's probably a really good way to come to meet an artist, is to have like a good way to go and see a show with yeah. really low expectations.
Yes,
and so that
well,
was
your whole audience can agree with that.
So that was my yeah. introduction to Prince as an yes. artist, and he did that album Parade under the cherry moon.
Yeah,
and I was in the pit where right in front of it, and I just did the biggest 180 that I'd ever done on an artist.
Yeah,
where he was the first artist I ever like. This is not really good for the podcast, but yeah. do you know that head movement there? That one there. Which everyone does now. He yeah. was the first.
He was a pioneer.
He was a pioneer of head movements, yes. of moving his neck.
Yeah.
And he just did that, and there was a whole line of them. And every night, and they would throw out, it was Purple, and he would throw out these tambourines. Yeah. And it was like a religious experience yes. where I was just like, he is the best thing ever. And he was probably about 26, yeah. and he could bounce up onto the piano, bounce up onto the top of the... He was, you know, just... Very nimble, do the splits. He could play guitar. And then
prolific songwriter.
Actually. Yeah, and, but also he could play. So I realized that he would do the sound check. So I would get there at 6 o'clock, and I was like, oh. And he would walk around every single instrument.
Yeah.
And play it, and you could shout out to play a song. And you know, I started to play Raspberry Parade. He was on drums.
Yeah.
And he just work a part time. Yeah. And you were like, oh my god. And then he would just yeah. walk on to the next thing. And he was tiny, but. I just went from, and that's the only time I've ever done that with an artist. I think everybody in their life has got one artist
yeah, yeah.
that they're really, really passionate about. And yeah. the Prince was that artist for me.
Yeah.
And then he did Sign of the Times, and
yes.
I had a pink and purple party yeah. and bought 10 tickets, and he cancelled the tour. And
oh well, that's the way it is.
I hate him, no.
Yeah,
no. But anyway, he was
Purple Rain. Have you ever tried to sing Purple Rain? I haven't, but I don't. I never go to karaoke nights. But I got some dreadful song I had to try and sing at this karaoke. And then a guy called Philip Pope, who's a brilliant sort of person. He's in the Radioactive with the Heebie-Jeebies. Written lots and lots of songs, and he did Purple Rain, and it was the most extraordinarily difficult song to do, which he did brilliant. And to me, that is me. Thinking about Prince.
Well, that's annoying, though, when people do a karaoke song well.
Oh, I know, but he's a proper singer.
Oh, and,
well, I think I was on afterwards doing
you hear
Stop Your Tickling Jock or something. Something, you know, not quite as high-powered.
Yeah.
No, so it's interesting you had Prince. We haven't had that many. A couple of people have gone with Stevie Wonder, which perhaps the name has suggested to go with it, who is another very similarly talented, all-round, you know, extraordinary ability person, but nobody's done Prince before, and I think that's a good
yeah, you know, Prince is, and I, it's hard to convey that level of, it was like a Jesus moment. It was like one of those things
yes.
that you were just transformed, and everything, I read everything about him, I wanted to know everything about him, and
yes.
and then I spent the rest of my life going to see him. Every time he was in concert, you know, and it was so sad when he passed away. It was such a
yes,
another one of those people that fell to those opioids that are big in America. That
yeah, he was starts off as painkillers and then
well, he had an injury and he was a religious evangelicalist person who didn't believe in surgery. So you know, and he was quite a real simple man. He was like he just had this pain and he just got addicted. You know, they got so many people in America sold the lie that this thing wasn't addictive and it was highly addictive.
I think he was a sort of Jehovah's Witness.
That's
for a bit,
right, yeah.
So he would go around the door.
Knocking people's
doors. I mean, that's a good calling card. There may be lots of Jehovah's Witnesses in tonight. I don't know. But mostly, I don't want that. I'll take a leaflet.
Yeah.
But if there's Prince there.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Go away.
yeah. Could you talk to me again? Perhaps you could sing it this time.
Yeah.
And I've got a piano here. You can play it well. And the drums, apparently, you can do that.
He didn't really. It was kind of weird. It was like this really highly sexual thing that at the same time, you know, quite a strong Christian. He did one song, The Cross. But other than that, it wasn't really, you wouldn't know about him that was what he was.
Well, there's quite a lot of those sort of singers and performers in America have that sort of conflict between, like Little Richard, who was a very sexual performer, but also at different times, that's very religious. So he
Kanye West?
He's
the same thing.
But then he's God, though, isn't he?
So that's
easier to be, in his own mind, that is. So. All right, so that's
a different level.
Yeah, so that's a nice, if I may say, sensible, you know, wonder, you know, putting on a pedestal, a very fine performer. Your next wonder is a bit different, and it's the Irish away from home.
Yeah. Is it really?
Yes. Well, I mean, does that imply you don't think Irish people are wonderful when they're at home?
No.
But it's
very funny.
When you're away somewhere, you enjoy the company of fellow Irishmen.
I'll just explain something to you. There's two lists. Clive's got the wrong one. This is a suggested thing for me. I didn't go with it. But yeah, we can go with that as one of my wonders to the world.
I didn't suggest this.
No, didn't you? Right. What was it again?
I had to discuss this the other evening about one of these shows because
I know it's getting quite funny this moment.
Yeah,
I've got to think. I've got to be wondrous about something. Yeah. I'm not quite wondrous about.
I once did an interview. I'm happy to mention it again. I once did an interview with Bobby Womack, who's an American rock star and writer. And apart from anything else, he wrote "It's All Over Now," which became a big hit for the Rolling Stones. But he also married Sam Cooke's widow. And in the course of that, he annoyed a lot of people. And there were huge attacks on him and violence and shooting. And it's all in the first couple of chapters in his autobiography. He came on my radio, radio program, Loose Ends on Radio 4. And he was there and he was quite towards the end of his life. And I said, well, what's this extraordinary thing happened? And you got into the car and said, no, that didn't happen. It's in your autobiography. Yeah, no, but I sacked four ghostwriters, and these stories aren't true. Well, there's well-documented events anyway. There were people prosecuted. No. And I've never done an interview.
I'll be sacking one tonight.
Yes.
My wife. Go start the car. I could talk about that if I wanted to. Like, I have been fully aware of, like, as an Irish person going to Australia and, you know, and being in London. And when I started doing stand-up, like, you would be asked, you know, because I had a career there. I have a good career there. And when it started off, it was the biggest cliche that you've ever, like, could we get you dancing in front of a leprechaun with holding potatoes?
Yeah.
And I go, I'd rather not, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I just totally avoided doing anything that was to do with being Irish when I was in Australia.
Yeah.
And, you know, as well as that, I've got the strong Northern Ireland accent, which they don't recognise in Australia as being sinister. they just hear, doo-dee-doo-dee-doo, and they think it's all...
Yeah. Well, it's a different accent from a Southern Irish accent.
Yeah, but, so. In Australia, they've all got the exact same accent.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go, like, it's just one. Any Australians in, just out of curiosity?
Yeah. None. You're
good.
The big star in Australia.
Yeah.
Do you know, I should have known this myself. Do you know who the guest is going to be? No. See, so it's you, and you've got your wonder, the Irish away from home, but you're backing away from it for some reason.
Well, I thought it was. I had suggestions on what it was, and then I think you've got the second list, so I'm sorry about this.
Well, you can do a different list, I suppose.
You know, this is what I thought it was. Anyway, this is what I thought it was.
This is anarchy.
I thought it was Australia. So, Australia was the second thing I was going to talk about. That's all right. Is that on your list?
I've got something which mentions Australia later on the list, so I don't want to. I got camping.
See, look, this is a suggestion. Ireland away from home. And no, that's the wrong list. Don't be reading that list. Read that list.
Which list am I supposed to
read? The one on the bottom. Read that one there.
Okay. Some of these look fairly similar.
Well, fishing.
So why don't we go with your list?
Oh, yeah, because if you went with fishing. This is often the problem. You know when someone sends an email and then you reply and then you can't find the original one. And Clive's getting on.
I'm not getting on very well, though, am I?
That's the list there.
Don't show me the list. Just tell me what the next one on your list
All
is.
Right.
I'll bust it.
Yes.
So Australia. You've put
Australia, yes.
It's a wonder of the world, Australia.
Yes, yeah. Australia is a wonder of the world. Yes. To me. I love it. I find it such an amazing country that was so different from where I had grown up.
Yes.
Like, in every way.
It was hotter.
It just had a different kind of class structure. You could feel it. You could reinvent yourself. That's probably why I probably would never have done stand-up if I hadn't tried to do it here. Because of that, you know, back in 1988, the Northern Ireland accent, we weren't as fashionable as we are now.
Everyone wants to be Northern Irish now.
We're the toast of the town. Now.
Yeah.
But, you know, back then, it was a different thing. And if you had gone on stage in the UK... I just didn't feel that doing jokes would have really worked that well.
Yeah.
So to go to Australia and then not to really know who, hear the Northern Ireland accent, and then I got a career and I was touring Australia. I've been around Australia maybe 20 times, just up to the very top, right, of the Gulf of Carpentaria around it.
Yes.
Seeing crocodiles and all those things that you just think of Australia, and then also the Aboriginal culture there. I just find that very, very interesting.
Mm.
And the way in which they approach land and the ownership of land, they believe that. So they have this thing called Welcome to Country, which they start doing now. Like if you go to anywhere, they'll do a Welcome to Country. And when I first arrived there, I thought it was people taking the piss. I thought it was white people taking the piss. I didn't understand what it was. It just sounded like, oh, we'd like to acknowledge the owners of this land. I was always saying, like, it'd be good if you could do that if you're renting a flat as opposed to paying any rent. I'd like to acknowledge the owner of this flat.
We're taking it anyway.
Yeah, I'm not going to pay any rent. but what it is it's not that. It's acknowledging that the land is the thing that we're on and there is no church. The land is the church. Yeah. The land is this religious thing and you're respectful on it. And nobody owns the land. It's there. But if you're in that area, you're respectful. And it was such a beautiful thing and so different to the culture that I had come from, which was all we were continually going through these fights about who owned what.
And there's never been any question of people nicking land off each other in Northern Ireland. I think the British Empire is coming badly out of all modern day discussion at the moment.
Not the flavour of the month like us. Having a career and I don't know, there's so many things to me that it was this continent that and like I've got this pearl on my neck. I was at a pearl farm on the west coast of Australia. I went, did a show in Perth, and then I flew to Broome, which is on the far northwest. And you feel like you're in the most remote place in the world. It's the only place, the only island, the only part of the world that's left that's just not really got anybody there, and it's so vast, and it feels like a wander. It feels wondrous in that sense that you go, all right, this is the last place on earth that has this sort of like untouchedness to it.
Right, so but just to go back a little bit to your career, you went to Australia, you say you're touring, but didn't you have sort of TV programs as well you were doing?
Before
you were back here doing comedy over here.
Well, it's just one of those things. Like some weird career starts. When I went there was a show and I was on it, and then the channel didn't want me to be on it because they thought my accent was too strong. Mm. So they said, we don't want you on it. We don't want you, even on the show, on our channel. So I left, came back here. And in that period, there was a show that had all these comics in it, and it died so badly that none of the comics, they could use them again. So they phoned me up and said, do you want to come back and do your own show? And I had my own show. It was on 7 p.m. on a Sunday, and it would win its rating spot up against 60 Minutes. So you became, overnight became like a 24, really famous. And it was like, wow, this is just such a bizarre thing. One minute I was on a year's working holiday, and next minute I've got my own show. So it was just such a great ride. And it was a great way to spend your youth traveling around this island that. And I didn't really come, I've come to Edinburgh because
I live in Australia, and I wanted to look like I had some sort of presence here. And it was also a really good way of catching up with my family. Like, so my mum and dad have been to maybe 10, you know, when they were alive, with 10 different Edinburghs.
Yes.
More.
Do they enjoy your shows? Were they fans? Or do they come along and say, why don't you get back to that sensible work you went out to Australia to
do? Yeah, no. My mum used to always say that. Don't forget, you've always got your tools. Hmm. But I had sold them. So, you know, they came quite a lot. They came. I've got my family here tonight, actually. I've got my sisters and my brother, and you know, so it's always a really good way because you're in one place for a month.
Yeah.
And the rest, touring life's not like that. When you're on the road, like you're just one town, different. You drive, you're in different places every night. So yeah.
So touring Australia, those are big distances.
Vast country to travel. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can do a 4-hour drive. And but you know, people do that sort of thing quite a bit. You know, you do shows. I did a show in Adelaide, and this guy came up and he goes, "We drive 6 hours to see you tonight," and 6 hours. They drove 6 hours to come to the show. So that's sort of catchment areas you're dealing with.
And did he like the show when
he
got there?
It was horrible.
I'm driving back another 6 hours, and it was absolute rubbish.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Australia.
Yeah.
It's been your second wonder. What I wonder is your third wonder. This is good. This is a good bit of the program.
I kind of like yours.
Yeah. It's the modern world.
Camping. Jesus. It wasn't even... Well, one of your wonders is a question mark.
No, it's not. None of them are my wonders.
All right, okay. Okay, one of the ones I know, sorry, on the list. Yeah, yeah. This
what is it?
Going so well. Podcasts in general, just the whole concept.
Podcasts?
Yeah.
I did not know that was on the list. So
it's a wondrous list, isn't it?
So what is wonderful about podcasts, other than it gives those
my list
who...
is what's really wondrous. No one knows what's on it. Podcasts are, I kind of like the whole concept of, like, normally you've got to ask someone's permission to do something.
Yes.
And then with that, it became, you know, limited to certain subject matters and certain agendas. And then the podcast thing happened, and there's so many people, and then you're just hearing so many different stories. I don't listen to a lot of comedy ones, to be honest.
No.
But I do like it when they reach into a subject matter and you go, I'm right, you know. And I often listen to them just to fall asleep too. Like, that's...
Yes.
I don't know, but we've probably lost a lot of people already.
they might be grateful. They might be grateful. Not here, not in the audience, but if they're listening on a podcast...
No, I'm talking to the audience too. We've probably lost a lot of them.
So, well, you're quite right. I agree that as an idea, because if you... I operate mostly in the world of Radio 4 at the moment, and I have lots of ideas that would fit in with Radio 4, but so does everybody else, so you have to go to a meeting.
But you were saying this was an idea you had for a show.
If you're interested, I was sitting in a Grand Central station in New York, and I thought, I don't know if I've ever been there. It's New York and the station. It's fantastic.
Exactly.
It's a beautiful station. And it largely deals with sort of quite, you know, suburban-y kind of trains really now, but because trains aren't that big in America anymore. But it's a fantastic station. I thought, this is a wonder of the world. And I was working there. I might have been paid to be there. I was sitting in a restaurant. It was fantastic.
Is that Michael Jordan restaurant?
This is a while ago. I don't know.
One on the upper level.
It was, oyster bar kind of thing. An upper level, yes. You're looking down.
Yeah, you're looking down.
Looks sort of marbly stuff. It's all Beaux-Arts decorated. Anyway, I thought, this is wonderful. And I started composing a list in my mind of wonders of the world. But there wasn't a very good list, because now I've started doing it. It's sort of personal things are much better than... But you can, you know, you can be have one or two buildings, or let's say something like Australia, you could have in as
But there's a trial and error period of a podcast that you, and we're very much in the trial part.
Yeah.
No, but
I would say we're very much in the error part at the moment.
But with, you know, you have an idea and you don't really know where it is going, and it takes you a while to find your feet. And I've just loved watching other people that have just done well. Like, I listened to this guy, Blind Boy, who's a podcaster.
All right.
And he just has got a great intellect, and he speaks in a language I can understand, very simple language. He's not highfalutin. He doesn't try and make you feel that he's very bright, but he's just kind of really interesting to listen to, and subject matters that people touch on. And then you see other comics that you know they would never have got a career if they had gone down the path of waiting for a TV executive or someone to give them the thumbs up.
And then
they've found a voice, and then they've found an audience, and it's unleashed this whole wave of new talent that is just breaking free of, you know, so waiting for someone to give you, you know. It's very frustrating that someone just getting the no, or because you're not the right type of person.
And so various podcasts you listen to, would they be that sort of thing, not just comedy ones? So there's lots of history ones, and politics ones, and science things, all sorts you can...
And you can touch, you know, get a catch-up on subject matters that you don't really know a lot about. But I just feel that it's... But I do enjoy the fact that, you know, people in comedy have found these voices, and it's got big audiences, and it's unleashed careers that would never have been... You know, got a chance otherwise.
And it's not just podcasts. So people make little films and put them on, I don't know, Twitter, but you know, and Instagram, all those kind of things. But
I suppose within the podcast, but it does it capture all of those things that you just don't have to wait for someone to say yes anymore. You can just go ahead,
do it yourself,
and just go ahead and do it.
Unfortunately, nobody pays you as
But you
Barry Cryer had a good gag about it. He said he thought podcasts are wonderful. That's the most extraordinary thing, because he didn't think there was anything that paid less than radio. But there it is. So podcast. I think this is a bit self-referential if we're on a podcast saying podcasts are wonderful. So allow you to have... I don't allow you. Any of your wonders are your wonders. What's your fix on them? So I think that's three we've done now. I may lose count without having the ones in front of me.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's... This bit with... You're eventually going to say an iPhone is a wonder of the world because you can't do anything else.
You have to get your face every time you put it down. I'm trying to get my face to recognize me.
Well, you're not two-faced, are you?
So but I have an eyebrows up face that only the phone recognizes. Yeah. See, I have to do that state of shock.
Yeah.
Open up, for God's sake.
Yeah. Anyway. Roger Moore used to have that trouble.
jokes. That's my wonder. Jokes. Because in a lot of ways, it was my introduction to comedy. When I did my first gig, I was totally naive what stand-up was. And a girl brought me in, and I thought, this is about just being in good form. I'll tell you a couple of jokes. And I know a lot of jokes. So... I started telling a joke, and people started laughing at the fact that I was telling a joke at a comedy club, and I assumed that they had heard the joke. And I was like, oh, you know that one? Oh, okay. All right, forget that. And I started another joke, and then they thought that was funny. And then, oh, no, you know that one too. And then it became a bit like people thought, oh, I'm actually doing a whole bit about not actually telling a joke. And I was genuinely like going, no, you know, don't tell me you know that one. Does anyone? I was going, does anybody not know this one? And everyone's laughing. Like, I genuinely thought they knew it.
Yeah.
And then it's good to hear people coughing again. Simple things you missed, didn't it?
Well, welcome to our super spreader event. It's,
I just love jokes, but I did. But when I met stand-ups, and they wouldn't know jokes, they didn't really like the concept of telling jokes, and I really like. There's certain jokes that I thought were, you know, like I made a film. I went to Cannes. And then people would say to me, "Oh, I would say, what's your film about?" And they would go to this. And I go, "Well, I've got a joke that, you know, it's a lot shorter than that, and it's a lot more complicated than that. Than, you know, like a whole film would be, you know, wouldn't touch on what a joke. Some jokes just you go, And then from that, during the pandemic, I was in the most locked down city in the world, which was Melbourne. And we had a curfew, and you know, you couldn't leave the house. So once a day, I'd tell a joke, and I posted it online at a certain time, and they were watched. Like, you know, it was like a couple of million hits on every one of them, and it furthered my career immensely. I had a really good pandemic.
what are you thinking of? Give us an example of a joke that you.
Well, I did a list. So, I did a list in as far as this is what they wear. Like,
yeah.
So I did a joke.
You've
a
done
day.
A lot of preparation for this podcast.
More than you,
just you
know.
Didn't. But I didn't get anything sent to me on it.
So I just did a joke a day, and I've got the days numbered. So you can anybody can shout out a number 1 and 10, and I'll tell that joke for you. 8.
Oh, yeah.
8. Oh, aye. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A guy breaks out of a hospital, runs down the street with a white apron on, you know, ass crack showing, drip running out his arm. Nurse, doctor, come back here. And he's down a street, down another side street, slips down a side into a pub, shakes him. He's up the barman. He goes, double whiskey straight. And he knocks it back in one go, and he says to the barman, and he goes, oh, I shouldn't be having that with what I've got. And the barman says, what's that? And he goes, 50p.
Very good.
Well done, the guy. The guy who said eight.
Number 9. Yeah. No. Yeah. Number 10. No. Anyway, they've got to be short. Guy's just number 10. Guy's just, I could lose everyone right here. Guy says to his friend, what kind of ringtone have you got? And he goes, I haven't looked, but I think it's a brownie pink. So short ones.
That's a short one.
Anyone that was less than 30 seconds, people really clicked on. And there were certain jokes you could try. And like, and people just looked like it was a highlight of the day, especially during lockdown. Mm. But drunk guy, there's number 5 if you're interested. Thank you. Drunk guy goes into the library and he goes, fish and chips, please. Mm. Librarian goes, this is the library. He goes, sorry. Can I have some fish?
This is going to be a flashback.
I remember that day.
Now, can I mention Frank Carson? You know Frank Carson from
Your
Father?
I
once did a gig. This is not really a podcast for my stories, but I was asked to do a big charity dinner with lots of things going on. And they said, because Frank Carson normally does the joke. He's been doing it for years, but he's not well. He's had a heart attack or something, so he can't do it. Could you replace him? And I thought, I'm not sure I'm the most obvious replacement for Frank Carson, but fair enough. So I went. And then we got close to it. They said, well, we think Frank is actually well enough to come. He can't do his thing, but he'll come and he'll be sitting at your table. Oh, okay, because I'd interviewed him before. So as you know, Frank Carson, if you even remember Frank Carson, he just does nothing but tell jokes. Yeah. I don't know how he ever hears.
But he never
hears it. I don't know how he can hear a joke because he never does anything except swear. So then he came, and then when we got towards my slot, somebody said, well, Frank said he would just go up and do a little bit before you. So Frank Carson's going to do some stuff, and then I've got to go up. I said, yeah, okay. So up he went, and he was getting requests for jokes. You know how a singer might go? So instead of he would do a couple, he'd do that joke you did last year about the Irishman joining the army. And he did request jokes for about 35 minutes into my 10-minute slot. And then, oh, you know, Clive. And I was, it was all right. I mean, I survived, but it was it was a hideous moment.
There's a joke about that, which was one of the jokes. It's on the thing. It's literally about, not Frank Carson, but a guy in prison. And on his first night, he hears them shouting out numbers, 56. Yeah. And well, there you go. We got sick of telling jokes. So we just numbered them. and then they're shouting out numbers and laughing and something else. Yeah. And he joins in number 4. And they all, 222, and they all start really laughing. And he goes, what's 222? And he goes, that's a cracker. They hadn't heard that one before. I was on.
I thought it was the guy joins in and shouts out a number and he gets nothing. And he said, well, I don't know. It's the way you tell him.
The other variation of it. Yeah. But I think with alternative comedy, there was a little bit of a highbrow thing. Like they were associated with a generation of comics that probably weren't as hip. But there's such a great little format thing, and they're so punchy and so, to the point.
I think you still need to have jokes.
Oh, totally, And it was interesting. Like, I can't remember jokes, but if someone tells me a joke halfway, I'll turn into Frank Carson. Oh, my friend, I'm doing it. It reminds you of a joke and then you're off. But when I had to sit down and actually go, right, every day, try and think of a joke.
Yeah.
And I got to like 100 and something that were all tellable.
Yeah.
And then they moved into the really good jokes that you can't tell.
Yeah. But were these jokes you were making up or you were remembering?
No, people these told jokes.
You these have a sort of ring to them, these jokes.
No, you know? These are jokes. Yes. I don't know who thinks these jokes up. I have never, because I have tried to write one of these jokes and they're awful. Like, I've never even come close to the complexity and they're so word perfect.
Yeah.
And you go, that is such a good, and no one seems to know who wrote them, where are they coming from? And they're just out there. They're free for all of us just to use. And it's really like, they're really nice things to remember. Yeah. And like, my father would tell me jokes and they would like involve horses and carts.
Yes.
And you'd go, oh, that's a different generation. Like,
yeah.
The guy goes up the house and the horse.
Yes.
And you go, oh, yeah, that was, you heard that as a kid. So that's. Yeah.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's your fifth wonder?
Well, the fifth wonder I'll have to find with my face. With my face again, I'm doing my eyebrows up just so my phone recognises me. See, I've done it too. I've lost it in the line of emails. It's in here somewhere. Question mark was what you had.
I had a complete list of seven topics.
What did you have? What do you have?
Oh, God, I've thrown it on the floor now.
It doesn't matter.
I'll tell you. I can tell you what the next one is. I've got fishing you haven't done.
No, that's not on my list.
Yeah.
As much as I enjoy fishing, probably falls under the umbrella of Australia. I don't really like killing fish. I like driving the boat and seeing Australia. But I didn't like killing the fish.
How did fishing get on your list of wonders then, if you don't like fishing?
The girl who was telling me about the show suggested topics to me that you've obviously got.
But how did...
It was just my wife.
I don't know who the girl is you're talking about.
No.
Why does she think fishing out of the blue and you
well,
go,
I,
all right then?
I would have talked about that under Australia. I would have, but, you know, these things happen. I didn't really touch on it.
Have you found your list now?
I have. I've always had my list. space. Yeah. As in, I don't know why it's on the list. No.
Space as in Brian Cox or Wonderful Universe stretching.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I found that something that, was one of those things that really makes you just go, wow, the vastness of it all and, you know, how insignificant and small this planet is. And I watched, I think it was a BBC series on Steve Hawking's A Brief History of Time, which I've never really seen again, but that was the first time that I had seen something that really explained to me what it was that was out there, that, you know, from what Hubble discovered and the fact that there wasn't just a one Milky Way, but this was a vast thing.
Yes.
I was in Broome, there was a show where a guy takes you out of town, so you're in the dark, and you watch the sunset. And, I think he did the show, the BBC show as well. But it's, he basically has a lot of telescopes, and you get adjusted to the darkness, and he talks you through the different stars. He has two lasers and he points them out, and then you look through a telescope and, you know, saw Jupiter for the first time. You know, I thought someone had just drawn it on a card, like a little highlighter. I couldn't believe I was actually looking at this thing. And, you know, I put it on the list because that's the feeling it had for me. It was wondrous. It was like, oh, wow. And then, the James Webb telescope that's gone up recently. Yeah. And the fact that you can now, people can just take photographs of galaxies and stars. And I brought a telescope, and the guy pointed out, Orion's belt, and then on the third bit of the belt, the one in the middle isn't actually a star, it's a supernova. Yeah. It's the remnants of a supernova. And you've got to track with it because the planet's moving. Yeah. So when you get on it, you've got to get these two little things and look at it. But you can see, like those shows, it's just an explosion, an actual explosion that's frozen there. And you're looking at it with your eyes going, oh, wow, I can't believe that this is, this is, sometimes when you have worries and problems and you just look up at it and really contemplate of your place in it, it really just, it helps things.
But because it makes you feel your concerns to be so small compared to compared to that's just Jupiter I bumped into there. But compared to the vastness of everything. But does that mean you say, oh, well, then my worries don't matter to me? Because our worries are what we have to focus on. We're our little atom in the whole thing. We've got to do our bit.
Yeah, no, it doesn't help me at all.
No.
Move away from my worries.
Okay.
But I try and find things to look at that help me move from my troubles. But I'm trying to look at these things. Like, what was the guy, Carl?
Oh, I know.
What?
Sager,
Carl Sager, and the Voyager missions, which had to be launched at a certain moment. Some guy, his PhD was to figure out the three-body movement. How do you get gravity? How do you get away from the sun? And he figured out that you could get slingshot from the planets. And then some other guy went, well, let's see when they line up. And they line up in 7 years. And then after that, another 150 years. Mm. And he mentioned it to NASA. And NASA went, right, let's drop everything and we'll do this. And they sent this probe. And the last thing before the probe left the sphere of the galaxy of our sun, the last thing it did, the last contact, was turn around and take a photograph of ourselves. And, and just the concept, somebody saying that to you, that's a scientist as well. Mm. And it's like a religious kind of look at life, but from a scientific point of view, where you contemplate everything, not some preachy guy telling you some guy said something, some sky wizard said something, just this real person going, right, this is what we did and we're looking at where we came from. So
it's like the biggest ever selfie. I when this crops up, and I am sort of, I do find it wondrous in a way, but I tend to side with Peter Cook, who had a great cartoon he once did. It's two people looking up. So, oh, you see all these distant planets and stars and supernovas, and I sit there and makes you think how irrelevant they are. Because there was a time when we thought we were going to go to foreign planets and things.
Yeah.
And we got as far as the moon. There wasn't very much there. It doesn't look as though we can. It's going to be quite hard to even get to Mars, and there's not going to be much there either. And all these distant things, they may have lots of creatures in it, but they're never going to be close enough to be any contact.
Yeah,
it makes us feel, to me anyway, makes us feel even more lonely in space because there's no prospect on current information of ever making contact with any other life.
Maybe it's for the best.
I mean, maybe, but
we don't get on with each other, never mind.
Yeah.
That was probably the thing that we united us. Going, oh, shit, they're out to get us now.
Invading aliens.
Yeah. And apparently there's more stars in the seeable universe than there are grains of sand and all the beaches. How you figured that one out?
Yeah, it's a lot of counting of beach sand, isn't it? One, two, three. Oh, this wind's blown. Go back.
Yeah. So, I wiped galaxy out of the crutches of my underpants when I've gone to the pool.
I think we've done space, two, three, four, five. I don't know how many we've done. Have we done five or six? Anyone keeping count? Five.
There's one more.
People want their money back. They want their money back. They don't get seven wonders. So six wonder now. Six
I did. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I missed three. Okay. All on my list. Three is dancing.
Dancing?
Yeah.
All right. Dancing. Any particular sort of dancing or all dancing or?
Dancing in general, yeah. Just the feeling that I get from dancing. Actually, here, there's just not a lot of dancing at the Edinburgh Fringe. That's, you know, when I go for a night out, it's just a lot of people talking. And you can go to see a show. At some stage in the night, for me to go home and say to myself, that was a good night, I've had to get up and dance. There's something, you just, you know, and it's primal. It's like a release.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and I did it as a kid. We did Irish dancing at school when we were at school. And my kids do dancing now. And I just, and my parents, you know, like, you know, they would be jiving. They were always jiving.
Yes.
Like, auntie and uncle. You know, everyone had an auntie and uncle that were really good at jiving. And they had trophies for it. And so it was one of those things. And then as time's gone on, like I've just seen different styles and gone to different countries and you see a national dance and the freedom that comes with it. And, you know, more than flag waving or the mentality that comes along with the sport.
Yes.
Or, you know, just all of those things that I don't really like about nationalities.
Yeah.
I do enjoy the dancing. If you see a certain culture's dance, I go, oh, wow, that's just...
Well, Irish dance became quite fashionable for a while, didn't it?
Yeah.
What was that guy who did...
Michael Flatley.
Michael Flatley. I mean, he sort of put it on the map, but... What is the basis of that style? Because using your arms. What's the is there some sort of religious reason why you mustn't move your arms around in
Someone
Ireland?
Said that they didn't let the English know that they were enjoying themselves. So if they came into the room, they looked like they were just had their arms down by their sides. But they
seems
were
unlikely.
Really, I don't know if that's true. Yeah. Michael Flatley, he started putting his arms up. We were watching. Go, you can't do that.
No.
That's unheard of.
Gosh.
We used to do Irish dance. We used to do Irish dance. I grew up in a town in Northern Ireland. We didn't have it. We did it in the Orange Hall. We did the Irish dancing in an Orange Hall. We didn't have a Irish dancing hall. We did, but they burned it down. So we ended up doing Irish dancing in the Orange Hall. And we had no idea that there was two different cultures. Like, we would see all these banners and big drums, and I thought, you know,
that's for the music. They're here to play music for us. Yeah, to
do. We were into march and doing Irish dancing at the same time.
Yeah.
We didn't know if we were coming or going.
Yeah. This really relates to the scientific method rather than dancing itself. But on a TV program, there was a guy who had researched, an Oxford professor, who said, what is the thing that produces happiness? And he got a proper computer program. What's the thing to make you most happy? And he put in, well, you know, a certain amount of contact, a certain amount of intellectual challenge, physical activity, good companionship, fed it all into the computer. And it came out the thing to give you most happiness based on all the data that he put in was Scottish country dancing.
Right.
And this is genuine. Then you say, well, okay, Professor, what's your hobby? Oh, it's Scottish country dancing. And he hadn't quite worked out that all the computer doing was just taking his information and giving the answer back to him. So I always think of that when people say, oh, we put it all into a computer and this is what came up. Yeah, but what did you put
in? But it does actually give it for me. Because I sometimes don't want to dance. Like, ever had that thing where you're up and you're like, your heart's not in it. And you're like, God, what's wrong with me? And you're not even in time. You can't even feel the groove. And you're talking to yourself, get with it. Come on. And then if you just force yourself and then you find...
Yeah.
And then it's a connection with people. Like, you could talk to ever in a day with someone, but if you're dancing with that person, you both look at each other at that moment. You know you're sharing that moment. And that's like...
Yes.
And then you go and you sit down and you go, oh, I feel good. That was a good night. That was a good night for me.
And would you say, I mean, obviously you like it, but are you a good dancer?
Yeah,
or are you more
yeah.
like a dad dancer? You know, they're just the way a lot of us do.
Yeah. We the think Tory party should have a little bit of dancing classes. Yeah. Just, none of them can seem to dance at all.
No,
it's awful, horrendous.
What you mustn't have, of course, it's difficult these days because there's always somebody filming now. Because if you've had, let's say you've had a couple of drinks, the music's playing, it's pretty like, you don't think, oh, I had a good time there. I think I did pretty well. And then, this is you dancing. Oh, maybe not so good.
I don't know if it's good to to pass critique on someone else's dance. But what is important to you that you're lost in that moment.
Yes.
In that moment when you're doing that, you've forgotten about everything and you're really trying to you know, stay with the music. And, I, you know, if and I think too much. I'm one of those people that just thinks too much. But in that moment, I'm really trying to stay with the groove and I'm connecting. And I associate it with my youth and I don't really do it as much as I did when I was younger. Like when I was, when we first went to those nightclubs or which non-alcohol, those blue light things.
Well, was I with you?
You were there. Yeah. You were there. Do you remember?
Just
that whole, feeling. And then trying to go, what is it that we're doing? And why is this such a beautiful feeling? So that's wondrous.
Yeah, okay, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I'm just got my eye on the clock because I don't...
Well, the last thing, number seven, is this thing that we're at, the Edinburgh Fringe.
All right.
That's the wondrous thing in the world that... That, you know, having come here for 27 years, I've spent, you know, 2 years of my life here, really, walking up and down the Royal Mile. It'd be good if you had a little bit of film just to capture how haggard I've become over the years and the joy drained from me. But
this is nonsense. You look like this when you first started appearing.
haggard. But it's one of those things. A lot of these plays, a lot of these things only exist here. And you'll never see them again. And some of them are wondrous. Some of them are like just amazing. And it makes it really hard to go and see theatre arts. Like if you go into the West End or somebody go, I'll go and see something in the West End, you go, I'd rather not, to be honest. You know, it's just after seeing what I've seen here and just realising that I don't know if the people, like, what a beautiful thing to have in your city, even though it's the traffic's horrific and the prices of accommodation go through the roof. I just feel like I've had such a cultural experience that I would never have got in any other part of the world.
Yeah,
like some of the plays and stuff with bringing my parents out. My parents are quite elderly. I would always try and find something to take them to that was different from what I would normally go to. And then my father was the same. Like, I went to see not the right stuff. And we were, my mum used to take him to the theatre and we were getting ready and she went to the bathroom. He goes, here, what is this we're going to go and see? And I goes, it's two guys stuck on a toilet for 25 years. And then halfway through the thing, he's slapping me going, he goes, I thought you were joking. And that's what it was. Yes, and it was just amazing.
A couple of years ago, I saw a play, and there's only about five of us in the audience. And it was two actresses, two women. It was set in Canada, based on one of those grandmother. And they were just two downtrodden women who were just completely, not drunk exactly, but just worn down by alcohol. And it was all like a mime. There's a bit of conversation. They mimed out awful things happening. Well, this is not a commercial operation, but it was extraordinary. It was an extraordinary experience conveying the horrors of what had happened to that generation of people as the world changed around them. And it was both horrific and I don't know why I mentioned that. But
I thought it would be nice for me. I would just like to... is it the curator? I'd like to curate my own. Like I go right, or even just ask people through some social media thing. Yeah. What is the most amazing thing you've seen that's just left of center, and see if there's a way of just getting it back again.
Yes.
For like, I saw this play on the Hurricane about Alex Higgins, and at the end of it, it was on at 9, and it was a one man play, and it was at 9 in the morning, and it finished at 10, and I stood up. Like, I didn't stand up because other people stood up. When it finished and he bowed, I stood up and just started clapping and everybody stood up. And it was a genuine standing ovation.
Yes.
And I said to the guy walking on, I go, that guy got a standing ovation. He goes, every morning he gets that at 9 a.m. Just doing that. So just to see something that you feel that you've walked out of this room and you walk out in the street and you go, wow, that's just... I was just such a little gem that I didn't know. And you can go the other way and see absolute rubbish, by the way.
Yeah. Well, the other
a lot of shape too. Yeah. Anyway.
The thing that strikes me about it is it's grown so organically. I attempt to say even in a particularly British way, in that they looked around after the war for some city to put a festival on in, and eventually they settled on Edinburgh, which was a lucky choice because it's perfect for this sort of thing. And they were going to put on, you know, an opera and a play and everything, which they did. But immediately people said, oh, we'll put on some other little things there. And that has grown from, you know, five extra shows to 5,000 extra shows. And it must do wonders for the economy of the city. And just the people who, like printers, who print flyers.
Yeah.
What have they done for the last couple of years? They must say, oh, we're hanging on for one more year. Oh, it's back again. Really? Fantastic. And we're all.
But I'd also say it's been instrumental in comedy within the UK, or especially with what I do. Like, so many of the comics came through here, and it became a podcast.
Yeah.
It's the same thing where you came up here and you experimented, and then people would watch you and go, that's getting a crowd.
Yeah.
Let's do this as a show. So many TV shows were born here.
It's like the Nashville of comedy. I think that's good. I think I'm going to stick with that. Okay, look, we've got to the end.
Hey!
Eventually, I think we've got to the end of Seven Wonders. My apologies if we've only done five, because I miscounted.
No, I think we did,
or we've done about 12 along the way. Jim Owen, thank you so much for sharing your seven wonders with me. Now I have to choose the wonder of wonders from your list of seven. The one which struck me as particularly wonderful, as you described it on this podcast. And I got a bit confused in the whole thing. I want, for administrative reasons, I want to have one that was on the original list and one you actually did, and one that I feel you made a good case for. I'm going to go with jokes, though. I think that's an appropriate one. Your selection of wonder, because jokes are a particularly human thing. I don't think any other animals tell jokes. Not that a horse walked into a bar is usually written by a human or ridden by a human. So I'm going. You're challenging me. I'm just looking to see. Was it on my list? You're saying.
I just thought it'd be a nice way to just finish.
With
one little joke.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Okay. So you tell the joke. We'll laugh and then we'll burst into applause for Jim Owen.
Okay, cool.
Hope that's going to work.
Okay. Paddy and Mary get married, and on their wedding night, Mary jumps into bed, takes all her clothes off, lies across the bed and says, "You know what I want, Paddy." Paddy says, "The whole of the bed by the look of it."
If you enjoyed this episode of My Seven Wonders, it would be wonderful if you could rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you found us. Thank you for listening.
My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson is a Stack production in association with Alaska TV and powered by the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.